Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Second Funniest Podcast. You could reach us at 408-228-4911, or you could send us an email to podcast@justincomedy.com. November 4th, I still have that CD-DVD recording happening. I know you're like, what? That's still going on? Yes, yes, it is. Rooster Teeth Feathers in Sunnyvale, California. You can get your tickets now. You can either call them at 408-736-0921, or if you go to justincomedy.com, I got a flyer right there that you can click on. It'll take you right to the link on their website to buy tickets. Please do. A lot of people have, and I appreciate the hell out of you for doing it. You guys probably already know, but Kevin is still in India, but I had a chance to go down and talk to that bio design company, LPA Incorporated, about their eco-friendly buildings and stuff while he was gone. So here is an episode sans Kevin. I sincerely apologize to all the Kevin Miller fans out there. For those of you that hate him, enjoy this bonus episode. Your wife?
Tribal screaming.
That's what you want to do?
Yeah,
you
want that kind of music?
Yeah, you just want to go out and...
Kind of.
Yeah. Not really.
Well, you know, we're in an office setting, so yeah. I got to keep it a little low.
All right, good. So you guys tuning in, yes, this is the Second Funniest podcast, but today we... no offense to you, Glenn, but this is not... The intent of this show isn't going to be to necessarily be funny. I'm sure humor will happen. I'm already in love with you. I'm a big fan of you. Just in the few minutes that we've met, but I'm here at, I know your name is Glenn Carrolls, right? So
that's
let's
correct.
Have a big round of applause for Glenn Carrolls. We have a studio audience we always carry with us, Glenn. They love you. They eat you up.
Appreciate it.
And we've talked about this on previous episodes of the show where I saw a documentary. I don't know what Rochelle has told you. Rochelle's also here. She's using a flip video, a la Daniel Tosh is what she's doing right now.
She's also toweling us down because we're getting a little sweaty.
Yeah, it's warm, right?
Yeah, it is,
but
a little bit.
I'm assuming that has to do with the, you know, well, okay. See, here's what you might have already picked up, Glenn. I don't know if you have an issue with focusing. I do. Whatever shiny I go with.
Really?
So I'm going to bring it on track, though. I'm going to be a professional.
All right.
And I'm going to rein it in for you.
Sounds
all right.
Good.
That's what I do. So here's what we are. We talked about this biodesign idea. And am I using the right term with that? Biodesign? Is that the proper term?
Yeah, there's so many terms. That's one of them.
One of them.
The general term most people relate to is sustainability.
Sustainability.
Yeah.
I like that. That's good. That's good. So what I talked to Rochelle, what brought this all on is I saw the documentary, The 11th Hour, right? And as I was talking to Rochelle before, I'm not a huge environmentalist, I'll be honest with you. But I'm watching this movie, usually with the idea of, like, when I see these things, like, I go, ha, come on, you know. Or so I just, I'm curious about it because I like to look at things that I disagree with necessarily.
Right.
Or... why did I say necessarily? It's the video. So anyway, so I'm watching this thing, and then at the end of this documentary, they blew my mind. They had all of these things where, like, it looked like, in for layman's terms, I know you have a better way of describing, we'll get into that, but that they were working nature into the building, into the structure itself, making it more efficient, making it more economical. And so that's when I was like, I want to find somebody who knows about this stuff, and I want to talk about this. Because to me, the big thing is that why is this not already happening? So that's why we're here. Let's go into your background, though. I want to get to know Glenn Carrolls, the man, the legend, the myth.
All right.
Like, when did you start? Did you always want to be a sustainable architect? Or
yeah, I think... Basically, because growing up in Southern California, we have this amazing climate.
Yeah.
And to not let that influence your design would really be a mistake.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I know some of the listeners right now are probably sitting, you know, hunkering down for winter. And we're chilling here in shorts,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
Just how it is. So, you know, if you're designing spaces that don't take advantage of that, right, then it really is kind of a missed opportunity. But, you know, growing up in Southern California, spend a lot of time outdoors. That's just kind of how you see the world and how you shape spaces. So, yeah, that's kind of the story. And I've been here at this firm for 25 years. And LPA has been a local firm in Orange County and has has really kind of done sustainable design before it was cool.
Yeah, that's so, what Rochelle was telling us, that it was in the, like, in the 80s is when you guys started, before it was even a thing. Am I right?
That's right.
When did the oil embargo happen? Is that the late 70s? I was born in 79. I don't know what your guys' ages are. Oh. You look like you could you could easily graduate with my high school, both of you, my high school class. Class of 97, Rochelle? No? How about you, Glenn?
Serious. Are you going to edit this, or should I just cut it straight up? Class of 1980.
No, no way. You're the class of 1980. You shut That's your right. face.
Yeah, I'm not kidding.
You are a beautiful SOB. Look at you. Looking great.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
And luckily, I still got my shirt on. Maybe
I know.
A little later during this thing.
Come on.
I'll show you a little more.
You're an Irvine. Yeah. You're a surf guy. You got to have rocking abs.
Well, you know.
I don't know how this got homoerotic, but I love it already. So back to you, Glenn.
Okay.
So now me, like my story, when I was a kid, I watched Bill Cosby and as himself, and I was like, I got to do this. This is what I want to do.
Right.
So you're saying when you were a kid, you just, because I can't imagine a six-year-old Glenn Carroll's walking around going, I'm going to build buildings that incorporate trees. Like, I just can't imagine that.
Yeah.
Or was that the case?
Well, Lego.
Legos got you.
Legos.
You were a big Legos kid.
Oh, come on.
What does a future architect? I built, you know what I built? Yeah. I built bricks out of Legos. I built bigger versions of Legos out of my Legos. And my father would look at me with immense disappointment. And he would say, what are you doing? Why? I paid $30 for these. Yeah. And you build bricks. You are an idiot. So now I'm a comedian.
Right.
So what does Glenn Carroll's build out of his Legos when he's a kid?
Oh, I built stuff that, you know, you shouldn't have been building with Legos. And,
really?
And that's, I think, one of the reasons why. You know, I like it. I like pushing the envelope. I like being involved in something that's new and exciting. And, you know, that's the thing about sustainability is that, you know, now that it really has become kind of a household term, it's mainstream. And now it's something that everybody's interested in. And yet, you know, we've been doing that for so long. And for me personally, that's just how it is, right?
Yeah.
You know, I like spaces that I can relate to nature. And, again, I think that does come from growing up here and really – you know, looking for different influences, right? You know, as a comedian, you get material from your real life, and musicians and artists, everybody. And so that's what inspires me is just my physical environment. And that's
so what's the first project when you come here to LPA? What's the first project you get in on? Like, and kind of go into that for me. Like, what's it feel like? Were you nervous? Were you scared? Or was it like, were you a fish to water? What, how was that?
I'd say probably one of the most intimidating things anybody can ever experience, other than, you know, standing in front of a crowd and saying, okay, I'm going to make all of you laugh, is a blank sheet of paper.
Yeah.
Right? Because, you know, you have all this, like, this diversity of issues that have to be resolved with one stroke.
Yeah.
And so with that comes a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
And so I think just starting on any project, it's always very intimidating. But once you get in the flow, then – you know, it's a whole nother thing.
Is it nice for you to work with a team? Like, because I've noticed, and Rochelle told me walking through, just real quick because we keep mentioning her name. Rochelle is, I don't know if this is, here's the thing. Media has taught us that the publicist is a horrible person who spins things. But you're a PR person here at LPA, am I right?
In-house.
Full time. We should have got her a mic, but we're going to ignore you now, Rochelle. No offense. You're very beautiful. We love you. You're charming. She's recording this now. You have now become like a media outlet. Look at you go.
I'm out of control.
All right. Well, listen, she's all over. She's videoing us, Glenn. All right.
Oh,
so let's back to
she
you.
She is multimedia.
You're the magic right now.
Okay.
So
I'm good with that.
Rochelle told me that you guys are very collaborative. Like, as soon as I walk in the building, people are meeting at desks. There's no separate office. There's no walls up.
Right.
Like, she even said the CEO is mixed in somewhere in all those little quote-unquote cubicles. The CEO of the company is in there somewhere.
Yeah, he sits by me. He likes to keep an eye on
me. He likes to keep an eye on you.
But, no, you're exactly right. We're talking about something where the best environment, the best sustainable environment is something that really kind of addresses a variety of issues. So if you kind of problem solve in an isolated way, it will never be holistic.
Mm-hmm.
And so we bring in engineers, we bring in all kinds of people that help shape a built environment simply because their perspective is different.
Yeah.
And so when you start drawing on a blank sheet of paper, you want to make sure that the first line you draw has their kind of input. And that's one of the beauties of, like, working in this profession the way we do here at LPA is it's always about people.
Yeah.
And that's really what we're doing, right? We're creating places and spaces for people to inhabit. And at the same time, we want to inspire. We want to bring laughter. We want to bring all these things that makes, like, you know, life worth living.
So yeah.
I think that's pretty exciting.
And this is also just hitting my head, too, is that what is unique about what you guys do here is if I'm assuming that if I'm an architect and I'm going to build an office building, the things I'm predominantly concerned with are square footage, codes of where it's being built, you know, whatever building codes, how is it going to be? Is it what kind of foundation are we going to need? You guys are doing all of that on top of the idea of making it as much as possible. Well, can I say that completely sustainable? Is it possible? Let's get into that, too. Like, is it possible to make a building that is completely self-sufficient?
Right now, it's difficult to do that. Mm-hmm. Absolutely, there's the possibility to do that in the future. There are buildings that they say are off the grid.
Yeah.
There are buildings that are grid neutral, which means you're still on the grid, but you're actually feeding back power to the overall grid.
But they call it, the power company calls that neutral. That's interesting.
Yeah.
I'm giving you back power, but that's just neutral.
Yeah.
That drives me nuts because that's always the same thing. It's like if you and I are late on a power bill, or take the power company. Maybe you have to work with these people. I don't know. Let's go cable. If you're late on a cable bill, they hit you with a late charge, right?
Yeah.
But if I pay early or they screw up on something, they don't give me a discount, right? That's what neutral. They call it neutral.
They call it grid neutral.
Grid neutral.
Yeah,
well,
that.
God bless them. I want to get it. This is the other part I want to cover too, is the science of it. Like, cause you guys not only have to understand how to build a building and like the engineer aspect of it and then the architectural, like you want it to be visually appealing.
Right.
But there's also this science to it that you have to understand the technology, I'm assuming, of like photocells and things like that. What kind of technology is out there that are being used that maybe everybody would know? And then let's go into the stuff that maybe not everybody would know.
Okay, well, let's start kind of in a general term.
And
I think what you started describing was the difference between building and architecture.
Ooh.
And really, I would probably relate it back to kind of what you do, right?
Uh-huh.
You can get up in front of an audience and read a script. Or you can get up there and you can connect.
Yeah.
And the connection is what architecture is. You walk into a space and it moves you emotionally. That's architecture. You come into a space and it provides shelter. That's a building.
Ooh.
So there's really something that we strive for, which is to go beyond shelter. And these connections that I'm talking about are really emotional responses that you get when you listen to music, when you see a beautiful piece of art. And what we're finding is the common kind of theme to build this connection on is nature.
Yeah.
There's a term called biophilia, which Ed Wilson and Stephen Keller came up with this kind of concept where they did a lot of studies. And there's a human inclination for us to relate to nature. We're just compelled by it. We need to connect to it. And so as architects and designers, we're creating spaces that do that. So when you come into one of our spaces, you have a better understanding of a bigger picture of, let's say, the local microclimate or just how nature is impacting that space. That's the connection I'm talking about.
Yeah.
That's that emotional response.
That's what you're shooting for.
So, you know, there's a lot of science that goes behind it, but that science, that kind of very pragmatic aspect, needs to be balanced with the poetic potential, the art side of it. And that's really the successful kind of delivery, is if you can have that balance that's relevant to the user group, the people that come there who had nothing to do with that building, but yet now they appreciate just how light might enter the space. And of course, again, here in our setting, we have a lot of that. You know, the fact that, you know, there's a slight breeze that comes through, even though I'm inside the building, because again, taking advantage of what nature gives us in that.
So you're saying in the building we're in now, if it's windy outside, it creates a breeze within the room?
Not in this building.
Not in this. Okay. But in buildings that you've designed. I apologize.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, that's all right.
All right.
But yeah, exactly. And it's just these very subtle kind of things. And again, that's part of the discovery process, right? You come out on stage, you want to discover who's out there because I want to connect not just with one, but all.
Yeah.
Well, imagine if you had to do that with people you never meet.
Yeah.
So,
and it's the difference between I have 30 to 45 minutes that I have to connect with this limited group of people.
Right.
And then they're going to reset and I might have to do it again. And I usually do it in the same way, or maybe I got to tweak a few things. But in your guys' situation, you don't know who's coming in 20 years from now. It's like, this is it. This is has to be the way it goes for a long. It's like I can't. It blows my mind. It blows my mind the amount of things that may have to be considered. Now, there's also an aspect of in comedy where you kind of say, you know what, screw those people. I'm the guy who knows what is funny. I'm going to do that. There are a lot of comedians who do that.
Right.
As an architect, do you ever have this moment of like, listen, I know this is what's good. Trust me. And everybody's going to like it? Or
a little bit of that.
Sometimes.
Because, sure. You know, there's sometimes that point where you can't really provide what they're asking for.
Yeah.
You provide what they need.
Yeah.
And that's really a completely different thing. And so sometimes you have to go beyond what they're saying, this is my expectation, because you know you can take them so much further.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit of that balancing act. But again, the tools and just, you know, the processes that we use today. I've been doing this for 25 years here at this firm, and it has never been this good. I know the economy is terrible and the opportunities are not as many as we've had in the past, but the tools that the design professionals get to use these days are amazing. And of course, they're all computer based.
Yeah.
And the fact that.
Did you have to do the spinny eraser back in the 80s?
Is like,
you don't miss that?
Oh, no, but I still draw. I'm one of the only people in this office.
You go pen to paper or pencil?
I go old school.
You go old school?
Old school, yeah.
You'll do homie feel, Glenn Carroll's.
Yeah, well.
That's how he does it.
Yeah. So, but at the same time, you balance that with kind of the digital tools that are available and a lot of 3D stuff. And I encourage people to download. Google has a 3D program called SketchUp.
Mm-hmm.
It's free.
Whoa.
And it is amazing. It's like your building blocks. You can go home and you can build square bricks digitally now. I know you did that with your Legos. Now you can do it digitally.
And,
oh, it's amazing. All free.
All free.
Oh,
that's what Google does. Google makes free crap for everybody. I don't know how they make money, only for people. Their name has become like just a thing you just say 15 times a day.
Yeah.
But everything they do is free. Everything.
Right. And that's good.
Right? Who doesn't want free stuff?
Yeah.
So here's the thing. I just want to make sure I get through what is my personal agenda. And so tell me if I'm asking questions that are inappropriate or wrong or maybe not in your wheelhouse here.
Uh-huh.
Is that I want to know what is out there. Because you know how we mentioned at the beginning that right now with the technology, it's very hard to make a building that is completely self-sufficient entirely, right? Like
right.
It just stands alone and doesn't really have any effect on anything around it. What is out there? What are things that people can incorporate in or I know that to say that people are going to bring it in themselves doesn't mean, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like what kind of things when you guys are putting together a building, what are you using right now to do?
Well, you know, we call it the low hanging fruit.
Okay.
Okay. Because ultimately the goal isn't to reach complete sustainability. The goal is to get everybody pushing in the same direction, where we're connecting a little bit more with nature and how we build spaces. So two areas really are areas we focus on. We're creating spaces that require less energy to do the same thing that, you know, other buildings are doing. And also, especially in California, but across the world, this is becoming more important, is water. How can we create spaces within the building, like even just flushing toilets?
Yeah.
What are some strategies of how we can take rainwater off of the roof, store it as gray water, and then use those to flush toilets? So we do things with it.
As opposed to pulling from like a drinking water system.
Right, exactly. So there's different levels of water use. There's potable water, which is the drinkable kind. And then, of course, you have a gray and black water. And anybody who's gone camping knows all those terms, right? You never want to mix those three up. That's all I'm saying. That's not good.
What is involved in black water? Like,
well, black water is the nasty stuff.
Yeah.
That's the stuff that goes through your sewers. So
that's the water that they have in Mexico. Am I right? I'm kidding. I'm totally kidding. I'm kidding. All right. So
it's taking kind of this water that that comes in clean, and it's only gone through one like iteration, and finding a way to, here in Southern California, we use a lot of it to water our landscape. So, you know, ways to do things with it other than just putting it in a storm pipe and pumping it down the sewer. And one of the things is in developing areas, that's one of the biggest challenges is you see them ripping up streets all the time because every building that's added to the grid,
that
they have to make these pipes bigger. Instead of saying, okay, every building that we add, let's put sod on the roof. Right. So now there's actually a little ecosystem on your roof that absorbs water.
This is good because what I saw in one of the examples, and I don't even maybe it was one of your guys' work, was that they showed an image while they're talking about these are things that we could do, was that an image of a building that was like tiered, like a staircase on one side and had shrubs and trees.
Right.
And that was facing the side that the sun was pointing at predominantly through the day. And so they didn't talk about this, but in my head, I'm thinking, I know that when I'm on a walk and I walk under a tree, it's like 10 degrees cooler under that tree than it is just in the direct, like, and that's 5 feet away. So to me, like, instantly, I'm like, that has to be more efficient than a shingle roof or an asphalt roof that they would put on a regular building.
That's right.
So just as simple as putting a lawn on top of a building, does it really affect, like, the heat being translated into the building that much? And then you're saying, are there further benefits to that or no?
Oh, yeah. As a matter of fact, there's a term, you might like saying it. I like saying it. It's called albedo.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah, I know. I knew you'd
like
that.
We're back with that homoerotic, I think. All right.
Hi, albedo. I'm having too much fun.
No, it's all right. I love how we're 12 years old.
Yeah. And obviously I'm not, since I graduated.
Yeah, in 1980. Well, come on. You look 12. I'll be honest. We'll get a picture of this guy. We're going to put him on our Facebook. Are you single, Glenn? Or are you married?
Married.
You're married? Okay. Yeah. Well, too bad, ladies. But we'll show you a picture so you can see. Missed the train on that one. So,
So here's how a local building can actually affect your larger environment. If you have a lot of, like, parking lots, right, it's a dark surface. So it actually becomes what's called a heat sink. And a lot of buildings have tar roofs or dark roofs. You have enough of that, and it'll actually change the local climate of the area because it's generating so much heat. Because if you think in its
natural
state.
And then it changes the airflow, like, back. Okay.
It actually will change the temperature patterns and flows around the area when you have such big fields of parking and dark roofs. So if you can get to places where you have a reflective light-colored roof, or in this case, a lawn on your roof where it's not bouncing more heat up into the atmosphere, it'll keep it more the way it was intended to be, right, in its natural state. And so that's part of what's happening. And one of the challenges for us as designers is to not just be kind of neutral, but actually be restorative.
Yeah.
We'd like to actually have buildings, because think about what's happening with your roof. It might have been a dirt field before you put this green roof up there. We're actually experimenting on some buildings where the walls are green. So you're not painting them. It's a living element. And now your building's adding oxygen to the environment.
Well, that was the other thing that made me think about it with these buildings, that like that tiered idea that I saw. It's like that helps with this whole greenhouse situation, in that now there's more plant life that we're filling up with concrete. We're taking away green aspects of the terra firma out of the thing.
Sounds good.
So yeah, I love it. I just made that up. But you're taking out this green. We're you know, cutting down trees to make rooms for suburbs and things like that. But if we started incorporating all this, then I'm sure that on some level, maybe grass doesn't replace the greenhouse grasses in the way that a tree was. Am I right on that thinking? But it's at least something. Am I right?
Yeah, anything natural would be better. And actually, we don't do grass on roofs because it's hard to mow.
Yeah.
You can imagine a rideable mower up, you know, five stories high.
Well, that's fun, right? Yeah. Come on.
Good times.
Get on a skyscraper down in the L.A. like landscape and you just see some dude up there. Yeah, oh, my gosh. I want to see a guy on a John Deere mower riding the elevator to the 15th floor. That's top shelf. I love that idea.
Or on the outside.
Yeah. Okay. Well, with your whole wall thing, that would be great. You get Spidey mower. He just goes up the side.
Yeah.
So what is the idea of it? Because to me, when you say that you could get vegetation on the walls, that to me says ivy. Like, I could have a regular building and just send ivy up the wall. Is that the idea?
Something like that. Yeah, but actually they have these. It's really pretty amazing. They're like these little packages of sod and seed that just plug into this vertical grid. And so you still build a wall with waterproofing, but the exterior finish has these little packets on it. And once you water it, it's like a big chia pet.
You guys are building 2,200 square foot chia pets.
Yeah, but that's on the down low right there. Okay. That's just LPA exclusive.
Oh. Yeah. All right. So. Wait, are we letting a cat out of the bag? Do we need to edit this out?
It's all good.
I was going to say, come on. I want to tell these people. This is, to me, because here's the other thing is that what's great, it looks better than stucco, number one, right? Because eventually you can also work into the idea, because I know that the fellows who are growing the cannabis, they know how to hybrid the hell out of anything. So next thing you know, they work with you guys, and I'm not saying growing weed on the side of buildings. That's what I'm saying. But it's in California for medicine, maybe on a hospital. But I'm saying that they could put flowers. And then, like through different seasons of the year, your building can actually change color.
Right.
All the while being better resistant to the heat of the sun and keeping everybody cool and happy. And then it's just fresh air and smells great everywhere around you. You know what I mean? Like, This is great. How do you solve the issue of, like, the drain? Because to me, what that would say is that the plants up at the top are going to get a lot less water than the ones closer to the bottom because everything's just going to go with gravity. If you guys have a patent.
No.
Because I'm sure all of your competitors are listening to the Second Funniest Podcast going, ha-ha, found it.
Yeah, that's why I'm giving you all false information. Yeah.
This is all 90% lies.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The trick is drought-tolerant plants.
Okay.
And if you use plants that are native to the area, they exist without irrigation.
Without any, yeah. They're...
So, they get watered probably just at the very beginning for the first month or two till the roots get established, and then they're on their own. They do their own thing.
Wow.
Yeah. Now, there's been architects that have suggested, like, putting sheep up on the roof. To just, graze constantly on their
grass. To mow the lawn up there.
Yeah, it's crazy stuff. But here's that connection we're talking about, right?
Yeah.
Can you imagine being up on the fifth floor of a building looking out and you're seeing sheep on the lawn?
That makes me think about, like, Wall Street. Like, you get a sheep who just can't take it anymore. You don't have any control. And he just wants to end it all. Next thing you know, you see him just flying by from the top of a building.
That's a dropping sheep right there.
Exactly, yeah. And then we have a whole new problem on our hands.
God.
But, no, I like this. So that's one way, right? So what about – because here's the thing. Everybody talks about photocells, too. Is that how efficient is that technology? Do you know? Or?
Yeah, very. They're the crystalline systems. They're the glass systems, which are the most popular kind. Are very efficient, and now with the federal kind of tax incentives, and people should check with their local power provider utilities to see if they have any local rebates. But it's now come down in cost where a lot of people are using them on their homes. And the systems don't have to be that big or that expensive, and then they do some life cycle costing, and it tells you how quickly it'll pay you back. But it's pretty amazing. You can get to that famous term, grid neutral, really quickly, where you're generating the power and feeding it back to the grid while you're away at work during the daytime, that when you come home at night, that's the energy you're using.
Yeah.
So it spins the dial backwards, and then it spins it forward. And, as some of the unknowns in our lives, like the cost of electricity – if you can control those, that's really a wonderful thing. And ultimately, if you think about it, that's one of the greatest opportunities we have is to generate our own power.
Yeah.
If every house in your neighborhood is generating power, that's pretty great, And so
that's what I live in. I rent a place. And when I saw this thing, I'm like, I want to figure out if there's a way that I could. My first thought, this is how dumb I am. My first thought was like, can I plant a lawn on my roof? Because my place gets hot in the summer and super cold in the winter. And so I'm thinking if I could find a way to put a few planters. And then I was like, why not even just try? Because my dad was going to do this for his cabin. He wanted to put photocells on top of the roof and everything. So he's in them, but it was kind of expensive and everything, which is another thing I want to get into. But so then I'm like, why not do it on my rental?
Right.
Because in my mind, I'm thinking I'm probably going to live here 2 or 3 years. I'm sure I'm going to save a ton. I pay $300, for 2 months to DWP for my power bill alone. That's just electricity. Man. And I live in a 2-bedroom place. I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know if I have a blender that's just running in a closet. But I just remember when I was living up in Northern California, it's not that much. All of L.A. could easily be just – because it's not like – because when you fly into LAX, you see nothing but rooftops.
Right, and
you don't
pools.
See trees or and pools. Yeah. You see pools and you see rooftops. If all of those rooftops were covered with photocells and then you throw a lawn in there on top of the house too, you get a few sheep, then all of a sudden we might as well be South Dakota. You know what I mean? Like – and the amount of money that could be generated instead of us trying to always negotiate how can we get power and water from every other place in the world, we could actually have another asset besides, drunk movie stars that we could give back to the world. You see what I'm saying, Glenn?
I hear you.
Right, brother.
I feel you.
Right,
I feel
brother.
You.
So, and the other thing that they talk about, too, on this thing that I saw was, like, geothermal, like, heating and cooling. Like, that. Right. I have no idea how that works. Is that about?
You know, there's a lot of different alternative kind of energy-producing methodologies. It's just which one is right for your local climate.
Yeah.
So, for us, really the most efficient in Southern California is the sun.
Yeah.
Some places, wind is better.
Yeah.
You know, in the Netherlands, you see these big...
Chicago, windy city.
Yeah, exactly. There, too. And so, it's pretty amazing. But that's the thing about being green or sustainable, is asking the right questions and really kind of knowing what is it that I have the most of for free.
Yeah.
And then just capitalizing on that. So, again, other things real simple for people to do, change your light bulbs. I know it sounds crazy.
So the fluorescent ones that they,
the ones that are more efficient, and you'll see a big drop in your kind of electricity bill. There's products now that put out more light with less wattage. It's simple. You just screw something in. And the other thing I talk to people about is go camping. If you haven't been camping for a while, go do that. And you'll quickly learn about power. You'll quickly learn about water and how to really manage it, right? You know, here you crack the tap open, yeah. You're brushing, doing yes. whatever you're doing. When you go camping, oh, no, it's every drop counts. Yes. And I think that that's part of it is that, you know, it's hearts and minds that need to change. It's not like the buildings that are going to lead the way. It's the people. And,
yes.
and really that's the push. And every 20 years, this is coming around, right? So in the 60s, it was big, as you yeah. mentioned, late 70s or 80s, where most of you probably don't remember.
Yeah.
It wasn't even high cost of gas. It was rationing.
Yeah,
either
exactly.
you had an odd
yeah,
or
my
an
dad
even
talks
number.
About that's yeah. the one thing my dad has of when I was your age, yeah. we didn't even have, people are complaining about this cracks me up real quick about my dad. Gas shoots up to $4 a gallon. He's like, you know what, when I was we didn't pay for water. Water was free. Now you guys are paying $4 for a bottle of water. Nobody complains about the cost of water per gallon shooting up ever like crazy. Now the gas goes up, he goes, We could only have so much gas when I was your age. Like I was like, all right, Dad, all right, here's a beer. Sit down, have a take a look.
That's a wise man, right
yeah,
there.
Exactly, yeah, exactly.
He is.
He's a very wise man.
Yeah.
But I don't know what it is that it makes it not to where people don't necessarily just listen to my father and go, oh, like he's Plato. I don't know what it is if he's crazy in the head or because he's not nice. I don't know what it is. But so let's get into that too, because to me, the first thing that hit me when I saw this stuff, I'd never heard of it or anything like that, and
right.
I'm like, it just makes sense. If you look at, like I was talking to Rochelle before, it's like if you just put pen to paper and go, this is the numbers. Like if you could go grid neutral,
right.
Now you don't have a power bill, or maybe you're getting a check from the power company. What's stopping everybody from just doing? Is it awareness? Is it like initial investment? Like does it cost a lot of money up front, or why isn't this already happening?
All of the above.
Yeah,
a lot of people just don't know what's out there. It is a little bit costly right now, but compared to a few years ago, it's just like computers.
Yeah.
You're getting so much more bang for your buck, and shortly, it'll be very affordable. But you know, you can go to Home Depot now and yeah. buy a bunch of panels and have somebody install it.
Yeah.
And then if you move as a renter, you just take it with you.
Take it with
yeah.
you.
Yeah. But you know, so it's kind of all the above. But you know, again, this idea of it really kind of happening every 20 years. The thing that makes it different this time is that it's measurable. People know about the environment.
Yeah.
Right? There's a lot of shows like this one that yeah. are getting the message out there because one person or one building can't change the environment. But if you get a bunch of people doing it, that's when you get those kind of results. So this is how you do it.
Yeah.
It's grassroots.
This is honestly
yeah.
my hope. My hope
yeah.
was that I could come here and be selfishly educated by you for free. And then the idea was, too, that I could tell the people who are interested. I mean, because most of the people that that's weird. I was going to say most of the people who listen to the show are interested in me. But my logistics side says, well, all of them, you idiot. They all are interested in you. I don't know why, but they are. So they have to have a similar interest. And
right.
I know that because there's all I keep thinking about is like, people that are struggling financially, especially right now,
right.
like to me, here's a way that you could drop down a few bucks here or there. And long term, I don't understand why anybody who is moving into a house that isn't going, like, why isn't that becoming, instead of getting granite countertops, you morons, put some photocells on top of your house.
You go.
And then that's going to cut into your expenses for the rest of the time that you're in that house.
That's right.
And then if you keep that house and it's a rental, then you can jack up the rent for a little bit because you know that the people living in that rental aren't paying utilities.
Right.
And you could have the same cost of living. And then what happens is now all of a sudden there's more money coming through to everybody except for the power company.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what I mean? Like, so to me that stimulates the economy. That's the way my stupid pea brain works. Like, doesn't that,
you're
am I
exactly
right on that?
Right. As a matter of fact, you just described what's called the triple bottom line.
Okay.
Anything that is truly sustainable has a sociological kind of positive effect. So how we are as a society, there's a positive aspect. There's obviously the environmental, and there's an economic payback as well. So if it's the right idea, it has all those
all
things.
Of them.
And that's exactly what we're talking about. And the thing about the current terminology, like sustainability, it used to be called conservation. And that's really the beginning of it all, right? We can orient buildings the right way. We can put grass roofs on them, grass walls, whatever, make them incredibly energy efficient, produce their own energy. But the idea is, let's change our mindset first.
Yes.
Let's think about conservation. Do I need a house that is 10,000 square feet for two people? Or even though I have all those things, right? Like I see it all the time.
You get 5,000 square feet, and then you get a 48-inch television. That's what everybody really wants.
Yeah, exactly.
But that's what you do.
Yeah, and a pool, right?
Yeah.
So that's the thing is, you know, pools take up energy, and all those kinds of aspects of what people today define as, you know, this is the right lifestyle for
them. Yeah.
That's where it starts. It starts at really looking at not so much which hybrid vehicle should I get, but how can I drive less?
Yeah.
Right? It's the simple, easy things. These are the low-hanging fruit.
Because these are I grew up, I may not look it, but if I do, then it bleeds through my genes. But I grew up from rednecks, a lot of rednecks. And so, like,
I couldn't tell.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Good. Good. Yeah, there was a little sarcasm there. And I still love you, Glenda, because I don't see it as an insult. Because here's the fact. The fact is that most of, quote unquote, what they call middle America, which I would call my people, right? Like, that's why I'm here. I don't know. When you say to me, you need to put photocells on top of your house or whatever, and I'm like, that sounds like a lot of work to me, and I don't know anything about the scientificness of it. I don't want to touch it. No, thank you. But if you say to me, hey, guess what? You want to not have a utility bill or pay a third of what you're paying now, then I'm like, well, hell yeah, let's do it. That sounds like a party. We'll get some buds together, get a couple six-packs of Bud. We put some photo sigma-dingas on there. Oh, boy, yeehaw. That I think like what you're saying is it comes down to that level of awareness that once people get on board and realize that it actually is cost effective, it is helpful. And like, cause I honestly don't know if you can, for most people, cause it has this new buzz thing of being political to say, which is so stupid to me. The idea of being, even I started this off, I'm the same one. I'm like, well, I'm not an environmentalist. How could you not be this? I've completely changed my mind on this right here, this instant. You both saw it. Congratulations. I don't know why that should be a good thing for you. But why not? Why would you not want to take care and just make everything? It's like what they talk about with the fluorescent lights, that there's some spectrum of the light that's missing in most office lighting.
Right.
With what you guys are doing is it's mostly natural light. You find ways to bring as much natural light into the building as possible, which means I don't have to pay to run lights so everybody can see their computer screens. But secondarily, they're getting what they should be getting because there's vitamins, I'm sure, that are created by you being exposed to sunlight.
Healing light.
Your employees are happier. Everybody's doing great. You get to be the one who's like, our building is so kick-ass. You know, we have sheep on top of our building, and we collect the rainwater, and that's what flushes our toilets. How many people can say that if they work at, you know, any other building? To me, I think it's cool. I hope I didn't sound condescending. Did that make it
No,
sound
I don't
right?
think so.
Okay, good. Good, good, good. So that's the other thing. I know we got to wrap it up here. Two things I want to just finish. Is there anything in your mind other than what we talked about, awareness, and that's key? There's no, like, you know how they make these movies about how the oil companies are keeping us from driving electric cars and things like that. There's no lobbying companies or industries that would, because would the power company be that angry if all of a sudden more of our buildings were sustainable?
You know what? Here's the thing. I'll answer that question maybe in a roundabout way. It's interesting you use the term power, right?
Yeah.
Because I think people have this perception that we are helpless as the consumer. In fact, they are service providers.
Yes.
They provide what we demand.
Oh, I'm going to make out with you. This is so great. I love this.
So this is the way we do it. Through these kinds of media kind of connecting us together to where we agree and say, okay, you know what? We're done. We're done with accepting the way things are. Here's what we demand from this point forward. And I've experienced it in just the California State University system and other, I'm sure it exists in other states as well, where it's about enlightenment, right? These students are like, oh no, I'm done with the way things are in the past. And if you don't deal with what I'm asking for, I'll go somewhere else.
Yep.
And so imagine that at a larger scale. All of a sudden, they have no choice whether they're going to build electric cars because we're just not buying any other ones.
Exactly.
Right? And the way to do that is, again, asking the right questions like, how do I drive less before I go out and buy another car and all those types of things. It doesn't have to be complicated. It's just, once again, thinking differently. The other part is, as a society, We've gotten to the point where it's always about we consume and dispose.
Yep.
Right? I mean, because as soon as we're done with something, we just get rid of it, or we go, hey, look what's coming down the road here. I can't wait for that new laptop. I got to get it just because it's
What are you going to do with the old one? I'm going to sell it on eBay, maybe throw it away. I don't know. Yeah. I'll decide then.
Right, exactly. But we've gotten into this rhythm where we demand everything that's new. And in a way, yes, it fuels the economy, but there are other economies in this world that have a different approach. The European kind of approach has always been quality first, not quantity. And so they demand a different product. They actually demand a product that lasts longer. So if we start doing that, everything changes, because ultimately we're the buyers. And if we don't want to buy, they're out of business.
Thank you. Because that's the part that drives me nuts, is that we, for what are, okay, I'm going to try and focus here. Because as consumers, right? It's even, because here's the thing. Like, when you say demand, I'm not criticizing what you're saying, but it's like, I feel like whatever reason that translates into, now all of a sudden we have to go back to like our hippie parents were doing in the 60s, and we have to have sit downs because we want a longer lasting, more fuel efficient car. No, that's not what you're saying. You're saying is that, and hopefully this whole new internet, because I was talking to Rochelle about this earlier, is that what I found that has helped our podcast take off is that now, because of the internet, people are becoming more impatient in that they want what they want and they want it now.
Right.
So hopefully that could be the weird kind of like self-absorbed thing that pushes us to being more eco-friendly, you know, and sustainable, to use your term, that that they could be like, this is what I want. Because that's really, especially I think, and maybe I'm getting too patriotic here, but in America, there's no reason why anybody can't really just have what they want. There's always a way. Maybe you have to work a little bit harder, depending on your income bracket and stuff like that.
Right.
But you could still do it. It's definitely achievable. It's just a matter of your interest to push. If we could get up off our lazy asses and just get on it, right?
That's
cowboy up, as my grandfather would
say.
And you just do it, right?
That's right. And you know, the thing is, you know, the economy the way it is, it's really not great. But if you look back at time, especially here in the United States, it's always made us better. We've always come back stronger. And the big push this time is going to be the environment and how it can really work its way into everything. And so, you know, it opens up new avenues, new jobs, all that. And so it's something that I feel will really fuel a stronger comeback. And we'll get back to that point where Made in the USA really stand strong as a brand.
Because back in initially, like, just to talk about cars, like, I remember cars back in the day, like American cars, you could kill somebody with it, and that, I remember being proud of that, right? Like you it was like a tank, like you know what I mean? And then all of a sudden they became cheaper and cheaper, but then now Japanese automakers are making, you know, more efficient, longer lasting, you know, and now they're you know, they got this whole hybrid thing, and then it cracks me up too, because there's a prime example of about how, especially here in Los Angeles, but I think it translates over probably more in like the major metropolises than it is in like rural America. But like, you have the example of the Prius. Like, I knew the Prius existed, but if I go to my hometown of Modesto, California, you see maybe 8 Priuses. If I walk around my neighborhood within a 2-block, I see the same 8 Priuses. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because here, people just decided, this is what I want. And then all of a sudden, you get Ford and General Motors like, we got hybrids. We got hybrids, too. Look at what we have. Please buy our stuff.
Yeah.
And yet, everybody seems to talk about, like, we're always the victim. We're the victim. And, oh, well, this is what they give us. This is, you know, we have to do this. No, That to me is the nice part about capitalism, is that it should be, if it's working properly, what the group, the majority of the people want, the majority of the people get.
Yeah.
And I think what we're looking at with this economy, and to get up on a soapbox, I don't know why I'm doing this, but with this economy, I think that what really is happening is that the majority of the people are uneducated. They're uneducated in how to live in harmony with the environment that is around them. And like, even with the real estate thing, my wife does loans. The people were buying houses they could not afford.
Right.
And she would try to explain to them, you can't afford this house.
Right.
If your interest rate goes up, you are going to be screwed, blued, and tattooed, my friend. And they'd be like, no, it's okay. Mm-hmm. Stated income. Yep, that's how much I make. Are you sure? Because if you sign this, you're saying, I make $2 million. A year, and I don't know, but something about your NASCAR shirt tells me that's not the case. Nope, it's fine. Just sign on the dotted line. We're going to get us a big house. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then now we find us in this. So, I definitely agree that out of this, and I think this podcast right here, this episode, this is what's going to go down in the history books.
Oh.
This is the one they're going to be like, I remember, they're not going to remember my name. They're going to remember the beautiful Glenn Carrolls.
Thank you.
Can people find you on Facebook, Glenn?
I'm not sure. That's up to Rochelle. She's in charge of all that part of my life.
Oh, so, okay. Yeah. Really? So you set up a Facebook for Glenn?
Oh, she does it all. She's incredible.
Well, so let's wrap this up because I know you have to go. What are some places? What are some resources that people can go to further educate themselves? Can they contact you guys here? I mean, you probably don't want people who are just, I want to figure out how to fix my backyard. You don't want them calling an LPA. You know what I mean?
Well, you know, there's the website is always a great place to start, and we have a sustainable kind of part of it. But again, I would just use the internet. It's the most empowering gift that we've been given.
Mm-hmm.
And just search and find things. You know, start with biophilia. That's kind of a newer term.
And what was that libido word you were saying earlier?
responds to the reflectivity of the horizontal surface.
How much okay.
So you can look that up.
No. Yeah. But you're saying biophilia.
Biophilia
as
is
in,
a term. I recommend everybody just start with that. And
just Google it.
Yeah, because you're going to get a smaller subset of information than putting in sustainability.
And there are ways, because I know you guys, what you guys do is on a larger scale with school buildings and office complexes and things and government buildings. So,
right.
But there are ways that even right now out there, because you guys are the most aware of the technology that I know, that people can do this in their homes right now.
Yeah, it's scalable.
So if you start looking at biophilia, and then the website here, I don't know it off the top of my head. What? LPAinc.com. Great people. And so if you're out there and you're an entrepreneur or you are connected to a school or something like that, please contact these people, because that would be an extra bonus, is that if some kind of business would come to you guys
out of
this.
That would be nice.
Yeah, right? Because these guys were unbelievably kind. Just to give you the quick backstory, I just Googled literally biodesign and found more people that were talking about like technology and medicine, and so I had to get more specific and put architecture, and then you guys came up for Los Angeles. I sent an email. Rochelle got back to me. So thank you guys very, very much. Is there anything else that we need to get out to people or anything? I mean, we got the website. If you have a building or...
We have a neat blog.
You have a neat blog. Yeah, let's get out the blog.
Architecture.
Uh-huh.
It's blog.lpainc.com.
blog.lpainc.com. So go to that, and then that's how they can not only just keep up to date on what you guys are doing and stuff like that. Because this is, I think, a thing that what can help you guys is that these people can contact their local government and say, hey, if we're going to be building a new school, like they're building a new school in my hometown, I could contact, the local municipality and say, hey, why not contact these guys and at least let them put in a bid to come up with a green building in Modesto, California, right? That's something that people can definitely do. Get on board with this. Please, for the love of God, stop being lazy and just make it happen. Can we just agree on that? I think so. All right. Well, thank you guys very much. I think we can wrap it up there. Yeah?
Our pleasure.
Oh,
thank you.
God bless you. I'm going to go make out with Glenn.
Are we going to go out with some rock and roll again?
We can. Let's can. I was afraid because I couldn't find anything. Let's just see. Let's go. You want some hard. You like rock and roll?
Yeah, sure.
Let's see. You said go out. I say we do this right here. How about this? Do you recognize this yet, Glenn?
I don't.
This is John Bon Jovi.
I know.
Oh, you don't? I was going to say, I thought this was in your wheelhouse, Glenn. John Bon Jovi, Blaze of Glory. I want you to imagine Rochelle and Glenn and I. We're wearing dusters made from hemp. Mm-hmm. And we're slowly walking out of the building.
Uh-huh.
And there's just a breeze walking by us.
Sun is setting.
Sun is setting. And we've harnessed all of its energy for today.
Because
we're completely sustainable. All right. Thank you, guys. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Wake up in the morning and I'll raise my weary head. I've got an old coat for a pillow and the earth was last night's bed. I don't know where I'm going. Only God knows where I've been. I'm a devil on the run. A six-gun lover. A gamble in the wind. To steal or have to win. Well, they tell me that I'm wanted. Yeah, I'm a wanted man. I'm a goat in your stable. I'm a Cain. What's the able Mr. Catch me if you can. I'm going out in a blaze of glory. line looking for forgiveness, but before I'm 6 foot deep, Lord, I gotta ask a favor.